On today's episode of The Good Word, Bomani Jones joins me to discuss the effects of the Tyrese Haliburton injury, the runway for the Oklahoma City Thunder, Kevin Durant going to Houston, of course some Scottie Pippen slander, and the future of the Eastern Conference. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. Don't forget, we are on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. It is the postmortem of the NBA Finals. My man, Bomani Jones. Bo, what's going on, man?
Hey, man. I know this doesn't sound like much to people who think that, hey, it's cool, you get to watch basketball for a living. Hey, man, playoffs is a grind, and I ain't even on the road. You was out here catching all these connected flights. Like, you know, this is a I congratulate you. You know what I'm saying? Y'all made it.
I'm tired. Like, it wasn't connecting flights through the finals because I rode on the league charter. I said, you know what? Forget my miles.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that you was balling. Gotcha.
Not at all. But it was basically one of those business decisions that says, okay, Vinny, you can leave when they tell you to leave, or you can take the risk of your 75 pounds of luggage being lost somewhere on a connecting flight. And I was like, you know what? I will ride on the league charter. So that was fine. Now I rode back home, Bomani, with a connecting flight that I was running through the airport like someone who shall not be named. You know, he had those nice commercials, like those type of things. But man, last night, Bo, we were texting and I was excited for game seven. Like there was this nervous energy throughout the building. I felt like Oklahoma City was going to win. And then the game started and I was like, oh, the Indiana Pacers do not scare, and they don't care. And Tyrese Haliburton was hitting stuff from deep, like four-point range. And then when I saw him go down, Bo, I immediately said to somebody next to me, can I just go home now? Like, it just took all of it out. It's no disrespect to the Thunder, worthy champions, all that, best record in the league, point differential, all the stuff. But for that night, it just felt empty.
Yeah, it was. They played so well in game six, they being the Pacers, and Haliburton played well enough that we were out here honestly wondering if they was engaging in some gamesmanship and what it was that they were talking about. Because, you look, the fear, at least for me, is when you say somebody's playing with a strained calf. The last guy that I remember trying to play through a strained calf was Kevin Durant in 2019, and he tore his Achilles. After, by the way, starting a game in a very similar fashion as Haliburton. And the major difference is Durant sat for like a month with that calf injury before he came out there. Haliburton didn't miss a game, right? And so he wasn't moving that strong, didn't have a lot of lift in game six, but he got it done. I didn't have it on the board that this was going to happen until he laid on the ground face first. And when I saw he was down there crying, that was not a pain cry. That was, I know exactly what has happened. And now we have a 25-year-old Olympian with a torn Achilles to go with the 26-year-old Olympian with a torn Achilles that we wound up with Jason Tatum a month and change ago. Yeah, I'm with you. It takes nothing away from what the Thunder managed to pull off. But that was rough, man. That was, especially after Haliburton's having one of the great postseasons that we have ever seen, right? Even if I don't care what the stats say, I watched that dude keep making shots like the legend of Kobe Bryant. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes.
And then now what?
Now we got a year where you're on the shelf, like Tatum, like Dame Lillard.
I mean,
like
DeJounte you said, Murray.
Dude, all these Achilles injuries. And I'm
James
not ready.
James Wiseman.
That's right. He did it again. Like, he had another. Remember, he came into the league hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, and we're going to Oklahoma City, we're going to give y'all flowers, you're going to get there. But is there something, Bo, to the amount of Achilles injuries that we are seeing in abundance? Is this a freaky thing? Is this a thing we have to examine in how much basketball these guys are playing, the pace of the game, the number of possessions, the usage? Or is this the new Tommy John in baseball? You know what I mean? Where just you bake that into the equation when you are signing some of these long-term, these pitchers to long-term deals.
Okay, but an important distinction that remains to be seen about the Tommy John is they come back like it never happened with the Tommy John. Like, Tommy John is not a career ender, as it was kind of seen when they first started doing it, right? And they've got mm-hmm. come a long way with performing the procedure. They appear to have come a long way with doing Achilles procedures. I know one thing they talked about with Tatum that was different than many cases is they had him on the table the next day to work mm-hmm. on that, which is not necessarily common. It was 9 years ago when Wes Matthews got every dime out of free agency that he expected to get with the torn Achilles. 2 years after a torn Achilles, Kevin Durant put up one of the great postseasons we have seen, but don't you act for a second like Kevin Durant was the same. Like the great, I'm assuming we'll get to him a little bit later, but
yep.
he is, don't say he was the same. That is a discredit to what he was before. He's just still wildly effective. But the idea that these guys are 25, 26, 24 years old, and they're the ones that are having these Achilles tears. No, no, no. It's a thing. Now, I had talked about it as potentially being an overuse thing and the guys play more basketball than they used to. And a dude around the college game hit me and made a very good point. And he was like, look, you're probably not having an issue with them playing too much basketball. Yeah, they're playing all these tournaments. They're playing all this AAU. But otherwise, they would have been playing on concrete or they would have been playing pickup. Like, they'd have been playing games somewhere. It's all the trainer time that's really adding up the extra miles was the argument that he was making, right? And the hardest thing for them is to get these guys to take some time off, because now that everybody is so readily aware of how hard everybody else is working, and you can log onto the internet and you can see the video of the next man, and these guys are playing and they're playing and they're playing and they're playing. This guy was telling me the hardest thing for him to get the guys to do after the season was stop playing. Yep. Like, they play basketball 12 months out of the year already, you know, but in such an organized fashion that you can't get them to take some time off. They're not playing other sports. There's no go right. off and play a little baseball or go run a little track or whatever it is. So, I mean, if we are seeing an increased preponderance of an overuse injury, then I am assuming that the problem is that they're playing too much basketball. Like, that seems to be a reasonable hypothesis to start with. Like, I mean, even if it's not a death sentence for your career like it used to be, it's still crazy to hear and to think about. Like, with Halliburton, it's not even like he's a leaper.
Right.
Even with Jason Tatum, I think I would probably say the same thing. It's not even like these are high-flying guys that you kind of expected from there. Like, if I told you that John Morant had an Achilles tear, you would not be surprised.
Right.
This is not the same as that.
Well, the thing is, A, that gives me some confidence that Tyrese Halliburton can come back, because he's not going to be heavily dependent on athleticism. He's athletic, but he's more long. He plays a lot of the angles better than he does, like, blowing by you. But going back to your point, I was doing NBA TV, so I'm talking to Isaiah Thomas and Channing Frye and Steve Smith and all those guys. And some stuff comes up, like the shoes, that they say the shoes need to be a little bit higher. Not
such
like
an
higher.
Old man thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Such not, an old man thing.
But you can't get them out of that thought. And they know what they know.
Right,
and
who am I to say? Who am I to say?
Like, yeah, these low-cut shoes. And I don't even think it's the low-cut. They're saying that the arch and the heel aren't high enough to compensate for all of the explosive plays. I'm with you on the specialization part. They're using the same muscles and playing basketball all the time. And then, of course, last night, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter like I did, people were like, shorten the damn season. It doesn't matter if you shorten it to 72 games. Those days in between will be filled with dudes playing basketball. It does not, in my opinion, it doesn't matter. And they're still going to miss games when stuff happens. So when you get to the point where you're playing game 80, 90, 100 of a year, you're still going to have that level of atrophy and risk. I don't think shortening the season at this point is it, especially, Bo, when these people come into their NBA careers with so many miles on their bodies that you cannot quantify.
Well, you also did not get to the biggest argument against shortening the season, which is, but they not.
Yeah, I mean, we ain't got to say that part. We ain't got to say that part.
It wouldn't matter if it was the best idea anybody ever had. It would not matter if the scientists told them no one will ever tear an Achilles again if they play 72 games. But they not. It's not, as long as everybody gets paid by the game and everybody involved gets paid by the game, you need to be glad they ain't took it up to 92.
Well, look, I think there's a reason we all know it ain't going. Look, they having a hard time with the expansion part of this, right? They're not sure that you can find enough people with all these billions to buy into the NBA like you thought you did 15, 20 years ago where everybody was lining up to buy these teams. Like, there's a lot that goes on there. Now, Bo, I guess we get to the part where we talk about the Thunder. They have a historic season. The wins, the point differential, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander winning all the MVPs at all the stretches. This series does not lead me to say, despite them having a historic year, oh, they're going to run off three in a row, or they're going to be here for the next X amount of years. There, I won't say flaws, and this is not like it's hard to say this when you're winning the championship. You just won the whole thing. But everybody likes to turn the page forward and say, oh, yeah, we're going to be here. I think the last few years have told us, Bo, there's no guarantees in anybody coming back and showing up just because it's so damn hard to win.
Yep. And they're going to be here for a long time.
I think they're going to be in contention. They're not going to fall off.
I think they are going to be at a level similar to where they are for a very long time. That is what I think. Now, I think that what makes them different than all the other teams that we're talking about is, and let us not forget this, as a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder, this is the third time Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been to the playoffs. That's it. The first time was the first year. They had 2 years they did not make the playoffs with this team, right? This version of the team that they have. This is only the second year of it. Every shortcoming that we can see and say that they have is one that we can reasonably presume will improve in part just with guys getting older and more mature, right? So I think we start with that part. The next part, of course, being they have, I want to call it 15 draft picks, first round draft picks over the next 7 years. They have the ability to adjust this roster however it is that they need to adjust this roster. I will also point out about this roster something that is truly fascinating. They've only got one super duper lottery pick. I mean, like a top three, top five guy. The only one they have is Chet. Everybody else, including Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who they got in a trade, but still, they figured out how to fill this roster out at the margins. They have guys that were big contributors during the season who didn't even play. Isaiah Joe being an example of that. If they had a different general manager, I might be inclined to believe you. But the things that have taken these other teams down, Denver not being able to afford to re-sign Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Bruce Brown, that's not going to be an Oklahoma City problem. The Warriors, who were really just closing off what was possible in a year that felt like somebody got to win this, right?
Right.
That's not going to be the thing. Milwaukee, which had had its issue with coming up short in the playoffs already, and then Chris Middleton's body starts falling apart, you know, and that's the big thing. That's their second best player.
Right.
The Celtics, who we thought would be here for a while, and then second apron happens, and then, of course, Tatum gets hurt, so then they fall off. All the things that I feel like we could point to about those other things, I don't think any of them apply to the team that they have right now. And let's just say, and it looks possible, I started this postseason saying they didn't have a good enough number two, okay? What if they wind up with two guys that are good enough to be number two? Because with Chet getting better and Jalen Williams, who put up 40 game five.
Like, yes, he did.
The only reason to say that they're not going to stay there or it's unlikely for them to stay there is because it's unlikely for everybody else. But this team, to me, was built according to a separate paradigm from those teams. And this paradigm seems like it's built to last.
Well, my thing is this, and I was going to lead to asking you this. One, I think I was higher on Jalen Williams than you were. And I was kind of like, if he shows up, and it's funny that we have gotten to the Scottie Pippen portion of the program where Scottie's like, yeah, I see a lot of him and me. Scottie, you ain't never put up no 40 ball in the finals. You ain't never saved the damn day. Jewelers. This is where you get your rings from. Jewelers.
I just want to say this right fast. All credit to Mike for the flu game. But that has to be what your mama feels like when she is sick as she could possibly be. And she still got to cook. Because y'all can't do nothing for your goddamn selves.
Nothing.
At all. Jordan had 37 with the flu. Okay? 37 with the flu. Scotty at no point was like, all right, MJ, I'll take care of this for you. No. No. We need you to give us... Hold on. Now that DeJordan scored 38 in that game, let us not forget, they only scored 90.
That's what... 30 means a lot more back then than it does now. Like, I... For one, there's that. For two, your point about your boy Scotty, this dude never looks at it and says, hey, Mike, you look like you close to death over here. How about I take the load off of you? Y'all work the ball through me, and we kick it like this. I bet you Scotty barely scored 15 points in that game.
He scored 17.
Oh!
Hold on. On 5 of 17 from the floor. Now, to be fair, he got 9 free throws, so he was trying, but it wasn't 40. That's all I'll say. It wasn't 40.
I remember one play from that game. He dunked on Karl Malone. That was it. He dunked on Karl Malone when they was down 24-9 or something like that in the first quarter. Bo, do you know my little trick that I can do at parties now?
Don't know where this is going.
No. Trust me, you can relate to this. I feel like if you put your mind to it, you could do it too. I discovered that if you name an NBA Finals game from 1987 till now, just name the game, name the year, I could easily tell you who won, and I can most likely give you some defining detail about said game.
Game 4, 94 Finals.
Game 4, 94 Finals. That was MSG. Knicks went to tie the series against the Rockets because in Game 3, Sam Cassell hit the 3 to put them up 2-1. And I want to say Pat, that might have been one of the games, the couple games that Pat actually had a game.
Man, I got to get you and Howard Bryan together. He can do this with baseball series.
Oh, hell no. I definitely can't do that.
No, it's amazing. He can do this with baseball series.
Did I get that right? I know the Knicks won that game because Game 5 was the OJ game.
Brother, I'm not even challenging you. You know what I'm saying?
Good. Like, I appreciate that.
That is wildly impressive. But no. To our original point, though, no. Jalen Williams, that's not even to say that Jalen Williams is better than Scotty. But he can do something different.
Well, look, Scotty's just happy that somebody's mentioning his name and it's not through the course of one thing or another. And it's not through the course of we talking about a migraine headache or him going Sitting Bull. Because what June memories do Scotty get? I'm just saying.
And it's not even Scotty's fault. He wasn't the one to even bring it up at first. You know what I'm saying? These other cats brought it up. And here we are.
He rolled. He's like, yeah, I think, you know, he's a much better shooter than me. But I do see similarities between him and Boy, if you don't sit down somewhere. When have you ever told Mike, hey, they're doubling you. They're tripling you. I got this. I got the matchup. Not never. That's what Jalen Williams, I think, has the confidence, bringing it back to Jalen. That's where he has the confidence to be like, you know what? This game is calling for this, like a maturity for a guy in his third year who was a point guard when he was in college and then had a growth spurt for him to recognize the things. To have a point guard mentality, but also turn into the dude, Bo, that can do big dude things, that to me is impressive. The thing that gets me, going back to whether OKC can keep this together, and I was going to ask you this. Chet and Jalen are in the same draft class. You're going to have to pay both at the same time. In this new paradigm, financial paradigm, can you have super, super max guy and then two rookie big boy maxes? That's the question I have. So with that being said, is this a San Antonio-like runway or is this a Golden State-like runway?
That is a very interesting question. And I think the thing I don't think that Presti gets enough credit for because of the bad luck this team ultimately had is how well they recovered from after making the trade for Harden. Because what gets lost is they traded Harden for like Kevin Martin, Jeremy Lamb, I think it was
Steven
one
Adams.
More dude. Yeah, Steven, the pick that was Steven Adams, and I think there may have been one more piece. But the key to it was that Kevin Martin's deal was expiring.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gave them a measure of cap flexibility. But in 2014, they were right there in the West Finals. They just ran up against what we didn't fully realize at the time was legitimately one of the greatest NBA teams of all time. In 2016, they were up 3-1 over what may have been at that one of the greatest teams of all time, like in both of those cases. But they had the Westbrook injury in 2013. They had the Durant injury in 2015. I just say all that to say, even with moving James Harden, they still figured out this team in such a way where they were still really, really good and legitimate championship contenders. So let's say something happens and they have to make a decision on calling Jalen Williams, right? Because I think you're more likely to find another one of those than you are to find the 7-foot three-point shooting rim protector with handles. Like, I think this is the beginning with Chet. I think it's easy for us to forget. He only played like 50 games this year and had a broken hip or whatever it was.
Right.
I think at some point you got to look at the guy in charge and be like, yo, I think he'll find a way. And I think he has earned a measure of faith to make us say, I think he'll find a way.
Oh, no. Look. Me and Sam, I think Sam Presti is one of the best executives we've ever been around. Like, considering the fact of this dude came up, he didn't come up in Oklahoma City. He came up in Seattle. When I say coming up in Seattle, he took over the team in Seattle. And there's certain advantages that you have in Seattle that you don't have to worry about when you move to Oklahoma City. And then you figure out, okay, we're moving to Oklahoma City. Nobody wants to come here. How can I build this team? Not knowing that I have these disadvantages working against me. Like, he figured all this stuff out on the fly. And I give him a lot of credit for that. And I don't want to discount and say that Clay Bennett won't go into some level of the tax because they just won. I'm going to let that question answer itself before assuming that they won't, especially with these guys being so young and you're not paying old dudes. But Bo, that's why you got the draft picks too. The draft picks are there in case you got to trade J-Dub or in case you got to trade Chet. This is the game just rewinds. It just looks different.
Right. And the game for the draft is different. And I still can't believe that people haven't adjusted. And what I mean by that is what throws me off in these deals like the Desmond Bay trade where you give away 4 first round picks or the Mikal Bridges deal where you give away 5 first round picks. And I got that with the Bridges deal if you're operating under the thing of look at this wonderfully affordable contract. We're not going to be able to find somebody who does it for this kind of money. Now, of course, they inherited some Mikal Bridges issues that I hadn't paid attention to, but apparently that meant I just wasn't paying enough attention, which is he don't like nobody to touch him. Like, he like the kid that don't want to be tickled.
Except Bubble Boy.
He like 30 years old. Like, get off me, dog. Get off me. Let's look at who the best players are in the NBA right now, okay? Luka Doncic was a super high pick, right? He was the third pick in the draft. Mm-hmm. Jokic is the 41st pick in the draft. Shea is, what, like 15 or somewhere in that zone?
Yeah, 14, 15.
Giannis was the 15th pick in the draft. Yeah. Just keep going up and down, man. The guys that are running this league are not top picks. This isn't that league anymore. There's so many more players and you can get them in more places. And so the idea that Presti is getting these picks and he finds Jalen Williams at, what was it, late teens or something like that?
Yeah, It was 12.
But the idea that you could find a player at 12, like Kawhi Leonard was drafted at 15, for example, right? Mm-hmm. The idea that you could find these people in these places, and I don't know how much of it is luck. I don't know how much of it is dead on skill. But if they wind up with a bunch of picks in the middle, it's cool. Chances are they'll figure out a way to get this done, especially since they have one of the 2-3 best players in the NBA. Like, that's the other part, too, is I got to start coming around on the idea that what Shea Gilgeous-Alexander does is I get to the right elbow, and then once I'm there, you can't stop me from making a shot. And that's really all you got to be able to do.
Get to
like,
the spot.
Like the LeBron conversation. LeBron don't have a bag. Hey, man, I don't need to know kung fu if I got a bazooka. That boy a bazooka. You got to be out here doing all this fancy shit to try to get by people. He ain't got to do none of that. It ain't never come up in conversation. This cat, Shea, is just like, look, I'm going to get over there to the elbow, and I guess we'll see what happens.
That's the Mike-like quality. There is no comparison, him and Mike. I don't care what the numbers say, but that is the Mike-like quality, because Mike would say, I'm getting to a spot on the elbow, and I'm hitting the shot, and there's nothing you can do about it. The relationship is between me and the rim, not me and you. That's where Shea is. And this is what I will say about Shea Gilgeous-Alexander watching him last night. That man was exhausted. That man did everything that was required of him to win a seventh game, and efficiency be damned. Like, sometimes in these games, these games are never pretty, right? You're playing 100 plus games. You're exhausted mentally, physically, all this stuff. He was 8 of 27. That's like Kobe Bryant in 2010, but it didn't feel like he didn't turn the ball up. He had 12 assists. He had to grind out a game, and we don't think of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as the grind-out guy. We think of him as being the guy that shoots 50% and, like you said, gets there. I earned a measure of extra respect for him because it did not come easy, even though they're favored, and he had to put the team on his back to some degree and say, you know what? Nobody else can take these shots but me, because Chet ain't ready yet and Dub can only do so much. I give him respect for the 29 shots. I don't trip on the 8.
No, well, Vinny, that's the thing that goes back to what I was kind of talking about before, the only been to the playoffs 2 times. We don't think of him as that guy because he hadn't had the opportunity to even demonstrate these capabilities and characteristics. It just hadn't come up. And so in that game last night, if he had more pelts on the wall, we would describe it exactly like you did, where he just showed up and was like, if we gonna win it, we gonna win it because of me. And I have to go out here and get the damn thing done. But this team, in the way that we have all historically watched basketball, it is a climb. It is the dynasty saga. And we watch those guys get to a place and bump their head against the ceiling. Like, for people who don't remember, when the Bulls got to the finals for the first time in 91, they were playing against a Lakers team that was Magic Johnson and guys.
Yep.
And people were still picking the Lakers because you normally got to lose before you get it. Like, this is just the nature of it. This is how it works.
Yeah.
They skipped through all of this. Like, they seem to me to be way ahead of schedule, given what it is that they pulled off. And now, that's the thing, Vinny. We're talking about a guy that on advanced metrics is putting up, like, top 20 all-time type of seasons. And now, not only did they win a championship, he did champion things. He had 15 points in the last 5 minutes of game 4, the game that absolutely saved their season. Tyrese yep. Halliburton is walking around just fine right now if they win that game, because it doesn't get to no game 7. They win that series in 6 at home if it comes to it. But Shai did what had to be done in that game. So what if he really is that guy in the way that we had to get comfortable with the idea that Jokic was that guy, just because it looked a little bit different. Ethan Strauss on his newsletter makes a very good point. The guys that are the superstar caliber dudes for real get it done with 2-pointers. It's not guys that shoot all these threes. And it led me to an interesting hypothesis, which is if you just kind of hanging around the league, then you need threes, right? Mm. If you go be a guy that can't go out there and get buckets, your shots need to be worth 3, not 2. But if you got it, if you that dude and you can go get 2 points at the rate at which Shai can go get 2 points, at the rate at which Jokic can get 2 points, at the rate at which Giannis can get 2 points, even Luka Doncic in this conversation, right? Then you could go, shoot mid. You absolutely, that don't shoot mid ranges. That ain't for the kind of dude we talking about right now. You know what I'm saying? And he can go get it done.
That's a great, you know what it is? Because shooting them threes is hard. When you get to a game 100, you ain't got the legs to be out there shooting 25, 26, 27 footers, unless your last name is Curry and you are at a different point in your career. They only made one of those dudes, right? Shai, and here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with saying, I want to see you do it. And when you do it, cool. I don't have to ask if you can. I don't have to doubt you. With the Jokic thing, it was like, hey, man, I just want to see you do it. Jokic did it, and now you're the guy. Shai, I just want to see you do it. You've done it, now you're the guy. You're forever stamped. We don't ask the question about Giannis anymore. We don't ask the question about Steph anymore. We got the question about Luka Doncic. We don't have that question anymore. Once you do it, you do it.
We don't ask the question about Giannis anymore, and good for him, because since that championship, he has given us lots of reason to ask lots of questions. But once you are a champion, unless your name is LeBron James, we don't ask any more questions.
No. Unless your name is Kevin Durant. And that's who we're going to get to next. Welcome back to The Good Word here with Bomani Jones. Bo, like you, we was glued. Oh, I told you yesterday. I was like, wait a minute.
You told me?
I told you yesterday that Kevin Durant was traded to the Houston Rockets. Were you surprised at the haul? The 5 second round picks, Dylan Brooks, Jalen Green, and the 10th pick in the draft. Were you surprised at that? Did you think that it should have been more? Because I got question marks about damn near everything.
Well, we got word that this package was not going to be that great because Phoenix had no leverage.
Right.
Right. And so that was the indication that we had received. So I don't know if I thought it would have been a bigger package because, again, this is still a 36-year-old dude who's many years removed from Achilles tear, but that being the case, and he still gets his buckets, but I think he's like LeBron in the sense that the stat sheet can look a little better maybe than the actual performance.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of us need to be honest about how much basketball we did not watch the Phoenix Suns play this year. I can just look at some of those advanced numbers and it's like, hey, I don't really know what happened, but I do know this. Phoenix, with their lack of depth and basically just being Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, they were over 500 in the games that Durant played. I did think that Houston would have to give up more in order to get him. I know that it was a bit of an adventure in trying to get this trade done. I am shocked that Ishbia settled for that package. Like, I am 2 years after he gave up four first round picks, Cam Johnson, Mikael Bridges. I am very curious what the conversations were that it took to get Matt Ishbia to go along with the deal that they got. Cause I'm sorry. Aside from the number 10 pick, I don't know if they got anything I'd really want. Like, I'd be cool with having Dylan Brooks. I would not want Jalen Green. And they keep telling me that, well, we're going to trade him to somebody else. Yeah, let me know when you do it. Let me know what you get when you manage to make that deal. I don't think Houston gave up anything that they had to keep. I don't think they sacrificed anything. And I think Windhorst had made the point that the Rockets were trying to get those Phoenix picks so they could trade them to Phoenix in order to get Kevin Durant so that Phoenix would resume having control over their own draft picks. They didn't even get that.
Right.
So they can't even go out here and lose. So as much as we're like, oh, they need to trade Devin Booker. If Devin Booker doesn't ask to leave, they have nothing to gain from trading him.
And you can't make Bradley Beal uncomfortable either. Like, that's the other part. You can't make him uncomfortable enough to say, you know what, y'all? I'll take a buyout or y'all send me somewhere. You can't do that. They have come to him multiple times. He said, hey, like a change of scenery. Now I'm straight. We good here.
Well, he's had a couple of trades that he said he's been cool with over time, but they never came together for whatever reason. Right. But he got to realize, man, that man signed on to stay with the Wizards. He could do a little losing. Like, he has decided on the front end that, you know, I could do a little bit of that.
It ain't losing. It's discomfort. You can lose, but do you want to be uncomfortable? That feels like an uncomfortable situation there. Yeah, and then Bo, they add Dylan Brooks to the locker room. If you're talking about somebody being made to be a little more uncomfortable, this could be some a Machiavellian move, I think, on the behalf of the Phoenix Suns.
So, anyway, you got Dylan Brooks going to be out there fouling them hard in practice. That's what we got. You're going to be out there hounding. Let me tell you this, though. I don't know what kind of Canadian hands Dylan Brooks got, but something tells me Brad Beal ready to go. I have been told, by the way, from an informed source that Dylan Brooks got some hands, but it was from a fellow Canadian. So, you know, they got to need – the Canadians think that we got some kind of – we as Black Americans got some beef with them, and I just can't explain it to y'all. We don't know nothing about y'all. Like, we don't know nothing about y'all. We don't think about y'all. That's just not what we do. But, yeah, you're right. That would be hilarious if the idea was to treat Brad Beal like a tenured professor. Like, when I was in graduate school, I had a professor who did a lecture about – it was in a management or organization class, and he talked about the things that people do to try to run out a tenured professor. Like, it's a whole industry because you gotta make them quit.
Right.
So the way it works is you make them quit. And so one guy, they put him on the fifth floor of a building where the elevator only went to the fourth floor and he had a heart problem.
Oh,
or something,
man.
Like that. Like, they did something to make him take the steps every day.
Oh, that's foul.
Yeah, but this, I mean, look, that's where they are with this, man. Brad Beal has tenure.
And look, the CEO or the president, whatever you want to call it, him and your agent are father and son. That's just right. What it is. That's just what it is. It is. Look, there's the Michigan State Mafia. That's part of that Matt Ishbia thing. And then there's the Bartles things. Man, that, not to make a Wire reference, but this definitely feels like the Barksdale crew against, you know, Marlowe's people. This is what it feels like, except it's inside the building. Yeah, who's going to win out?
They've got a big problem here. Like, this is, they've got Daniel Snyder. Like, everything about Ishbia feels like Daniel Snyder. I mean, he wants it bad, and he wants it right now. And that's the only way he knows how to go is extra hard. That's all he's got.
And nobody there can tell him no. Or if they do tell him no, he wears them down to the point, okay, man, do it your way, but know that this is what it is. And we've been talking about Phoenix, but I do want to go to Houston, because one thing that Houston needed was a guy who's a number one scorer. I don't know if I want Kevin Durant at 36, 37 years old, Bo, to be my number one option. I think that is too much to ask out of someone at his age. And when you look at Kevin Durant's numbers, and you're like, man, he's consistently 50, 40, 90. Yeah, but go look at that Oklahoma City film. Go pop in when he scored 53 against Golden State in 2014. How that jumped off the page. How quick he was off the bounce. It's almost like you're watching something at 1.5 speed. He looked that athletically gifted. Now he is more refined skill where if you bother his shot, you bother his shot, maybe. But he's not the same specimen that he was, not that you would expect him to be. But, Bo, are we asking him to say, okay, KD, carry us to the promised land as the number one option, as the accomplished vet on this team full of babies?
So my question for you in this regard is, do you need Kevin Durant to be your number one option, or is he the guy that can get you a bucket when you need a bucket? Because I think the key thing here is he can go get you a bucket when you need a bucket. Because it's a matter of time, I think we all agree, before number one is Amen Thompson. He'd be number one in every way, right? Like a Kawhi Leonard type of two-way sort of player. But what they didn't have was a guy like, look, we just need a bucket right now. We need to stop this 8-2 run. Can you go get us a bucket? Mm-hmm. They have that now, right? You know, if you can manage him through the year, right, and don't have him doing too much, I see it.
Well, A, it's like two questions that comes up for me about this whole KD thing. One, Miami talks all the time about wanting to go big game hunting, and they have struck out every single time. And for what it seems like, they didn't put anything into the package if you really wanted Kevin Durant. And I am shocked that if you are the things that you say you are, you don't, right? Second point, does Kevin Durant have to lead here? Ime Udoka, that dude don't take no shit, right? Steven Adams is a leader in his own way. Amen Thompson is a dude. And you know what I mean? Like Fred VanVleet, is this a spot that is tailor-made for Kevin Durant to just go hoop?
Well, Ime know that guy.
Yes.
Like, we can't forget that part. Ime coached him in Brooklyn as an assistant. Ime knows that dude. I don't think they need Durant to lead, but I also think that Durant, if you need Durant to come in there and rah-rah, that's not going to happen. Right. But Kevin Durant, first of all, Anthony Edwards is a great example of this. We got a whole lot of dudes that grew up watching Kevin Durant play. Like, Kevin Durant can be lead by example guy, very similar to what Steph Curry was. So, like, let's ask this question. If Kyrie Irving played with Steph Curry in Brooklyn, would it have gone any different?
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
Not.
Like,
yeah, probably
like,
not.
No. Like, with Steph, we allow him to lead by example. And Durant at 36, I think, can probably do a lot of what that is, right? But no, I think this was a great move for them. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. He's probably going to play 60 games a year. I don't think that part's as big a deal. I think he gives them that something. Because look, Oklahoma City still needs to get a bucket getter guy. Like, I think that Jalen Williams is good to have, and maybe he evolves into that. But even if I'm just going to get like a Vinny Johnson off the bench, sorry, dating myself. But even if I'm going to do something like that, a dude that like, okay, come get us some offense right fast.
Right.
They still need that. The Rockets just got that in the form of Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's early to say this, and I apologize for putting you in this spot. Is it Oklahoma City and then Houston?
In the West?
In the West? Yeah.
Probably. Now, the question is this. First of all, no guarantee that Giannis actually leaves Milwaukee. I don't understand what motivates him. Like, I think he wants to win, but how you want to win means different things to different people, right? It's not out of the realm of possibility that Houston gets Giannis.
They got all the stuff. They still got all the stuff.
They still have all the stuff.
You got Reed Shepard. You got Jabari Smith. You still got the picks. You've got enough youth. Cam Whitmore, you got all the things that if you wanted to go get a player in his prime, you could still go get. They could pull a Danny Ainge in 2007.
And you got Shingun.
Ooh.
You got Look Shingun. Here. You tell me if I can't have Shingun, then you can't have Giannis. Fine. Okay. Thought you were going to present us a quandary or a dilemma of some sort. I didn't realize this is going to be such a simple thing. Like, yeah, you got this. Like, I came away from the postseason being like, oh, Shingun, that's nice.
Yeah, here's what I think the thing is with Giannis. I think if Giannis wants to leave, he knows there is not a... Now, Houston is the one team, but when I was thinking about this, there wasn't just a one team that could absorb a Giannis and all the things that it would cost to get Giannis and then be a championship team. So why would I leave right now my comfort zone to go to a place that's going to make me uncomfortable and I'm not going to win? So if you want to get in the Giannis business, you got a year. Get your draft picks, get your house in order, get your aprons in order, and I will come and carry this Milwaukee team to 50 wins, because that's what Doc Rivers does when he has undermanned teams and nobody expects anything of him. He pulls a 50-win season out of his ass. And that way, we can say goodbye amicably next summer, because whoever wants me gets their decks in a row.
That's fair. There's something to that. This is going to be something, man. It's going to be something coming up to the draft. And it's so wide open, except for the fact that I think Oklahoma City's on top of everybody.
Yeah. So with that, let's look at the East real quick. No Halliburton for a year. No Tatum. To a lesser extent, no Damian Lillard. The New York Knicks don't have a coach. How do you handicap
the East? They still don't have a coach.
They still don't have a coach. I think it's going to be Mike Brown. I've been saying that for like 3 weeks. If you don't have a coach and Mike Brown is out there, you might hire Mike Brown. And I'm not saying that in a negative way.
No. Let me explain to you why I'm making those noises.
Okay.
Because I agree with you. I don't think it's negative. I think Mike's a good coach. Mike Brown, nobody gets fired for doing a good job quite like Mike Brown. Mike Brown has had one bad season as a coach, and he got fired immediately after. Mike Brown once got fired after winning 66 games. That year with the Lakers where they lost in the second round to the Thunder, but I contend if you watch that series, they lost in 5 games, and Kobe couldn't buy a shot in the fourth quarter of any of those games, which is just the risk you take when you're the Lakers. 5 games into the next season, after they had decided to try a whole new offense, Jerry Buss, who time was short, decided to make an impulsive move and fire Mike Brown.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, Mike is not a guy. You put Mike Brown as the coach in New York and these people around it, how much they gonna respect it? I don't mean the players. I mean media and everything else. They just don't seem to respect it. And I know normally the game is to go from a tough coach to a player's coach. And I think Mike is not a softy, but Mike qualifies as a player's coach. Right. No, they're not going to get Ime. They obviously can't have Ime, but that's the guy they need. Like, they need somebody to come in there and explain to these dudes what's what.
Well, you can't go get Michael Malone because that's just Tibbs West.
Fair. Although I think he is a better strategist, but fair. There's some Eeyore.
I think Tibbs is a better strategist than people give him credit for. Tibbs just gets in his own way.
Yes. No, I think he's a better strategist than he gets credit for, but I think Mike Malone's a better strategist.
I could go with that. And I'm very curious how our friend Joe Mazzulla does next year in Boston with all the changes that are going to go down there, how long he is for them, and how long they are for his ass.
I think they are both heavily invested in each other. I think Brad Stevens staked his professional reputation on identifying this coach. Like, this is Brad's. Like, hiring Ime is one thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is Brad's. Like, I think this is a little different. But what I don't know what'll be a satisfactory season for them next year. I have no idea.
Well, I think they're going to come off of Jrue Holiday and his money. I think they're going to try to, of course, they're going to try to trade Porzingis just because that thing went up in flames with whatever it is that he got and all of that type of stuff. I wonder what happened. You know, they got to get out of the aprons and all that type of stuff. Like, it's very obvious the financial decisions that they're going to have to make, which means they're going to be a lesser team. It's going to be like a gap year, I think, next year for the Celtics. And then you figure out what happens when Jason Tatum comes back. I don't know. But that, like you said at the top, we thought that was a long runway. And now they have to recalibrate everything, including figuring out what type of Jason Tatum you're going to get when he gets back and what Jaylen Brown looks like with a whole year as the number one guy and not a whole lot of youth around him. I'm very fascinated by that.
Imagine a world where Jaylen Brown walks in and says, guys, I want to be traded.
We'll be right back with the last word. Time for the last word here at Bo Money Jones. Bo, Dakota just put this in the rundown, so this is not Maya. This is a Dakota special. As we close out the season, is there anything that sort of sticks out and stands out to you as like a defining element of 24-25?
The times, they are changing, brother. This felt more than anything like an ushering of a new generation. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is 26. Like, I think your time really starts at like 27. LeBron won that first ring at, what was it, 27?
27.
84. Yeah, it was 27. 27. He hadn't turned 28 yet. Right. Michael Jordan won his first ring at 27. By and large, this is about the time where guys do it. 26 and 25 were dueling for it this time.
Mm-hmm.
If Oklahoma City had lost to Minnesota, Anthony Edwards is 23. He'd have been the guy that was out here trying to make this happen. Like, it's time to move away. And look, it's not because I don't like these guys, but we're not supposed to still be paying attention to LeBron, Steph, James Harden, that whole run of dudes. We're not supposed to still be doing that. The future has finally gotten here. We're now here with the next generation of NBA basketball. That is what defined all of this, is the arrival of the future.
Well, it's funny because Giannis got a ring, Jokic got a ring, Boston got a ring, and it didn't feel like we had moved on, right? For whatever reason, like, those guys are not in the Durant, Curry, LeBron age group. There is a significant gap between them because Giannis is 30, Jokic is 30. Like, you can see that Tatum is, 26 or whatever it is. But like you said, this feels like those guys snatched it in a way that we don't even talk about them unless we make ourselves talk about the Lakers or we make ourselves talk about Golden State. Or, you know, like, there's this delusion that, man, if Steph wouldn't have hurt his hamstring, maybe we're having a different discussion. Nah, it ain't that if Steph hurt his hamstring or didn't hurt his hamstring. It's that when you get old, you get hurt. And that has to happen. That happens to old people. Like, think about how old Magic Johnson was in 1991 when he carried the Lakers to the finals. I want to say Magic was 32.
I want to say 31 at that point.
And for whatever, and people get the numbers of the ages skewed because they look back and they're like, man, Magic was out of his prime or whatever at 31 and Bird retired at 32 or whatever it was. Like, y'all, it's a different game. It's more people are prepared to come into the league and play pro basketball at the level that the game is being played at. And the adjustment period just isn't there anymore. So 30 now isn't 30 then. But when you're 40, Bo, we can't expect Kevin Durant, who's had not only had an Achilles, he's had a Lisfranc, he's had an MCL, and an Achilles. One of those things on itself is a career ender. You got three killers on you, and you still playing? I'm not asking you to be the number one option. LeBron, you're 41 years old. Why? Steph, you're about to be 38 years old, and you have the hardest task of all because you're not a physical giant like these dudes are. You're going to have to work a lot harder to get whatever it is that you're going to get. Why?
Because they pay so much money now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's just all it is, man. And come get another $60 million. You know?
Yeah. I mean, here's the last question, and I'll hate to put you on the spot here. Is this the LeBron James farewell tour this year? Or did this new ownership thing just change it?
Who knows, man? I don't know what it'll take for him to stop playing. Because he'll be able to play for God knows how long. Like, I hope it isn't I'm going to play till a career-ending injury. But it doesn't feel like he's not going to be able to play. You know, now that last, a couple playoffs ago where it seemed like his body just completely broken down at the end. The one where I guess I'm thinking about when Denver. They played against the Nuggets.
Yeah. Denver.
In the conference finals.
He was out of gas. He was out of gas in a way that I'd never seen him out of gas.
But he's not going to walk away from this game. Like, Michael Jordan walked away in 1998. Of course, he came back. And maybe that informs the way these other guys are moving. But, like, we saw him walk away. I don't think LeBron is going to be able to just walk away. Kobe didn't really walk away. Kobe was awful by the time he got to the end.
Well, the crazy part for me, did you think when Mike walked away in 1998 that that was an unnatural retirement? I thought, okay, Mike, you're 35. Okay. It's about time to retire. I thought it was time.
I mean, think about it. Like, 6 months later, John Elway retired coming off a Super Bowl win.
He was just, what, 37?
Yeah, and he was still good.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like he didn't have to stop doing that, right? He was still good. But again, wasn't paying like they pay now.
That's a good point.
So if I can go make another $65 million right quick, I mean, I don't see how $65 million is going to change LeBron's life any, but that's easy for me to say because ain't nobody, I don't know what I wouldn't do for $65 million.
That's and the numbers keep going up. And you're still likely underpaid to what you mean to the league.
He has probably, for his career, been underpaid by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even approaching $1 billion.
Easily. And that's why he's going to expect the league to hand him a team, because he's like, how come I can't get all of the money that you owe me? I can't say the brother's wrong.
Yeah,
it just ain't gonna happen the way that he think it's gonna happen.
We gonna see, brother. We gonna see.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is my man, Bomani Jones. Don't forget to check him out on The Right Time 3 times a week. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that works behind the scenes on this show. That means producer Dakota and producer Dakota. I'll be back later on this week after the draft to talk to y'all again. Until then, everybody be safe.